Chapter 28. It was getting dark when I got to Founder's Landing, but I could see a waterfront park at the end of the road. I also saw a stone monument that said, Founder's Landing, 1640. I deduced that this was where the group from Connecticut first landed. If they had stopped at Foxwoods first, they would probably have arrived here in their skivvies. To the east of the park was a big, big house, bigger than Uncle Harry's and more colonial than Victorian. The house was surrounded by a nice wrought iron fence, and I could see cars parked in front of it and some cars up on the side lawn. I could also hear music coming from the rear of the property. I parked on the street and walked down to the open wrought iron gate. I wasn't sure of the attire, but I spotted a couple in front of me, and the guy was dressed pretty much as I was. Blue blazer, no tie, no socks. I found my way to the back lawn, which was wide and deep, sloping down to the bay. There were striped tents, colored party lights strung from tree to tree, blazing tonga torches, hurricane candles on the umbrellaed tables, flowers by Whitestone, a six-piece combo playing big band stuff, a few bars, and a long buffet table. The very height of East Coast seaside chic, the very best that the old civilization had to offer. And the weather was cooperating. Truly, F. Tobin was blessed. I noticed, too, a big blue and white banner strung between towering oak trees. The banner read, Peconic Historical Society Annual Party. A pretty young woman wearing a period costume came up to me and said, Good evening. So far. Come and choose a hat. Excuse me. You have to wear a hat to get a drink. Then I want six hats. She giggled, took my arm, and led me to a long table on which were about two dozen idiotic hats. Tri-cornered hats of various colors, some with feathers, some with plumes, some with gold braid like navy hats of the period, and some black hats with the white skull and crossbones. I said, I'll take the pirate hat. She picked one off the table and put it on my head. You look dangerous. If you only knew. Out of a big cardboard box, she fetched a plastic cutlass such as the one Emma had attacked me with, and she slid it into my belt. There you are, she said. I left the young lady so she could greet a group who had just arrived, and I walked farther onto the sweeping lawn, hatted and armed. The band was playing Moonlight Serenade. I looked around and saw that there weren't too many people yet, about 50, all hatted up, and I suspected the big crowd would arrive after sundown in about half an hour. I didn't see Max, Beth, Emma, or anyone I knew for that matter. I did, however, locate the closest bar and asked for a beer. The bartender, dressed in a pirate costume, said, Sorry, sir, only wine and soft drinks. What? That's outrageous. I need a beer. I have my hat. Yes, sir, but there's no beer. May I suggest a sparkling white? It has bubbles, and you can pretend. May I suggest you find me a beer by the time I get back here? I wandered around, beerless, and checked out the acreage. I could see the park from here, the place where the first settlers landed. Sort of the local Plymouth Rock, I guess, but virtually unknown outside of this area. I mean, who knew that the Fortune followed the Mayflower? Who cares about second and third place? This is America. I watched Mr. Tobin's guests spread out over his broad lawn, standing, walking, sitting at the white round tables, everyone wearing a hat with a feather, glass in hand, chatting. They were a sedate group, or so they appeared at this early hour. No rum and sex on the beach, or skinny dipping, or naked volleyball, or anything like that. Just social intercourse. I saw that Mr. Tobin had a long dock, at the end of which was a good-sized boathouse. Also, several boats were tied up at the long dock, and I assumed they belonged to guests. If this party had been held a week earlier, the spirochete would have been here. Anyway, curious sort that I am, I walked the length of the dock toward the boathouse. Right before the opening of the boathouse was a big cabin cruiser, about 35 feet long. It was named the Autumn Gold, and I assumed it was Mr. Tobin's boat, named after his new wine, or named after Mr. Tobin's as yet to be discovered treasure. In any case, Mr. T liked his toys. I entered the boathouse. It was dark, but there was enough light coming from both ends to see two boats, one on either side of the dock. The boat to the right was a small, flat-bottomed whaler of the type you could take into shallow water or wetlands. The other on the left side of the dock was a speedboat, in fact, a Formula 303, the exact same model as the Gordons. For a half second, I had the spooky feeling that the Gordons had returned from the dead to crash the party and scare the crap out of Freddy. But it wasn't the spirochete. This 303 was named Sandra, presumably after Frederick's current squeeze. I suppose it was easier to change the name of a boat than to get a tattoo off your arm. Anyway, neither the cabin cruiser nor the speedboat interested me, but the flat-bottomed whaler did. I lowered myself into the small boat. It had an outboard motor, and it also had oar locks. There were two oars lying on the dock. More interesting, there was a pole about 6 feet long, of the type used to move a boat through bulrushes and reeds, where neither oars nor motor could be used. Also, the whaler's deck was a little muddy. In the stern was a plastic crate filled with odds and ends, and among them was a compressed air foghorn. "Are you looking for something?" I turned to see Mr. Frederick Tobin standing on the dock, wine glass in hand, wearing a rather elaborate purple tri-cornered hat with a flowing plume. He was stroking his short beard as he stared at me. Mephistophelian, indeed. I said, "I was admiring your boat." "That boat?" "Most people notice the speedboat, or the Chriscraft," he said, indicating the cabin cruiser docked just outside the boathouse. I said, "I thought that was the Autumn Gold." "The make of the boat is a Chriscraft." He was speaking to me with a tiny tone of irritation in his tiny voice, which I did not like. I said, "Well, this little guy here is more in my price range." I smiled disarmingly. I do that before I fuck somebody big time. I said, "When I saw the Formula 303, I thought the Gordons had returned from the dead." He did not like that at all. I added, "But then I saw it wasn't the spirochete. It's called the Sandra, which is appropriate. You know, fast, sleek, and hot." I love pissing off assholes. Mr. Tobin said coolly, "The party is on the lawn, Mr. Corey." I noticed. I climbed up to the dock and said, "This is some place you have here." "Thank you." In addition to the fruity hat, Mr. T was wearing white ducks, a blue double-breasted blazer, and an outrageous scarlet ascot. "My goodness." I said, "I like your hat." He said, "Let me introduce you to some of my guests." "That would be terrific." And off we went, out of the boathouse and along the dock. I asked him, "How far is the Gordon dock from here?" "I have no idea." "Take a guess." "Maybe 8 miles?" "Why?" "More like 10, I said. "You have to go around Great Hog Neck. I checked my car map. About 10. "What is your point?" "No point. Just making seaside conversation." We were back on the lawn now, and Mr. Tobin reminded me, "You will not question any of my guests about the Gordon murders. I've spoken to Chief Maxwell, and he has agreed to that, and he further reiterated that you have no official standing here." "You have my word that I won't bother any of your guests with police questions about the Gordon murders, or anything to do with the Gordons at all. I promise. But I need a beer." Mr. Tobin looked around, saw a young lady with a tray of wine, and said to her, "Please go into the house and get this gentleman a beer. Pour it into a wine glass." "Yes, sir." And off she went. Boy, it must be nice to be rich and to tell people, I want this and I want that. Mr. Tobin said to me, you're not a hat person. He excused himself and left me standing alone. I was afraid to move lest the serving girl with the beer not find me. It was deep dusk now, and the colored party lights twinkled, the torches blazed, the candles glowed. A nice, gentle land breeze blew the bugs out to sea. The band was playing Stardust. The trumpet player was terrific. Life is good. I was glad I wasn't dead. I watched Frederick work the party, person by person, couple by couple, group by group, laughing, joking, adjusting their hats, and putting plastic swords in the belts of ladies who had belts. Unlike the most famous Long Island party giver, Jay Gatsby, Frederick Tobin did not watch his party from afar. Quite the opposite, he was right in there, mixing it up, being the most perfect host ever. The man had some cool, I'll give him that. He was near broke, if I could believe Emma Whitestone, and he was a double murderer, if I could believe my instincts, not to mention what I'd just seen in the boathouse. And he must have known that I knew both his secrets, yet he was not ruffled. He was more concerned that I not fuck up his party than that I might fuck up his life. A very cool customer indeed. The serving girl returned with the wine glass of beer on a tray. I took the beer and commented, I don't like wine. She smiled. Me neither. There's more beer in the refrigerator. She winked and moved off. Sometimes I think I'm blessed with sex appeal, charisma, and animal magnetism. Other times I think I must have bad breath and body odor. Tonight I felt I was on. Hot as a $3 pistol. I tilted my hat rakishly, adjusted my sword, and began working the party. It was mostly a young and early middle-aged crowd, not too many of the grand dames and DAR types. I didn't see Margaret Wiley, for instance. It was mostly couples. The world is mostly couples. But there were a few strays who looked able to make conversation if neither of my one and only true love showed up. I noticed a woman in a white, sort of silky dress wearing the required chapeau from which fell long blonde hair. I recognized her as Lord Freddy's little thing, who the Gordons had pointed out to me at the wine tasting. She was crossing the lawn alone, so I set course and intercepted. Good evening, I said. She smiled. Good evening. I'm John Corey. The name obviously meant nothing to her, and she kept smiling. She said, I'm Sondra Wells, a friend of Frederick Tobin. Yes, I know. We met in July at the vineyard, a wine tasting. I was with the Gordons. Her smile dropped, and she said, oh, that was terrible. It certainly was. A tragedy. Yes. You were close to the Gordons?
Well, Freddie was. I liked them, but I don't know if they liked me.
I'm sure they did. They always spoke highly of you. Actually, they never spoke of her at all. She smiled again. She spoke well and carried herself well, as if she'd gone to school to learn how to do those things. It was all too practiced, and I could imagine Tobin sending her off someplace where she had to walk with a book on her head and recite Elizabeth Barrett Browning while sucking on a pencil. I personally couldn't see why anyone would trade Emma Whitestone for Sondra Wells. Then again, beauty is in the eye of the beholder and all that. I said to Ms. Wells, "Do you like boating?" "No, I don't. Frederick seems to enjoy it. I have a place on the water west of here. I love the boat."
"How nice.
In fact, I'm sure I saw Mr. Tobin, let's see, last Monday about cocktail time, I guess, in his little whaler. I thought I saw you with him." She thought a moment, then said, "Oh, Monday, I was in Manhattan all day. Frederick had a car and driver take me and the housekeeper to the city, and I spent the day shopping. I saw her little brain working and a frown passed over her lips. She asked me, "You saw Frederick in the whaler with another person?" Perhaps it wasn't him. Or if it was, he may have been alone, or perhaps with a man. She frowned again. I loved to stir up the shit. Beyond that, I had now placed Ms. Wells and the housekeeper in Manhattan at the time of the murders. How convenient. I asked her, "Do you share Frederick's interests in local history and archaeology?" She replied, "No, I don't. And I'm glad he's given it up. Of all the hobbies a man can have, why that one?" "It might have had something to do with the Peconic Historical Society's archivist." She gave me a very cool look indeed, and would surely have walked away, except that Frederick himself popped up and said to Ms. Wells, "May I steal you a moment? The Fishers want to say hello." Frederick looked at me and said, "You'll excuse us." "I guess, unless the Fishers want to say hello to me too." Frederick gave me an unpleasant smile, Ms. Wells gave me a frown, and off they went, leaving their boorish guests to contemplate his gauche behavior. About 8:30, I saw Max and Beth. Max also had on a pirate hat, and Beth had a sort of silly bonnet on her head. She was wearing white slacks and a blue and white striped boat top. She looked different. I walked over to them at the long buffet. Max was stuffing his face with a plate of pigs in the blanket, my very favorite. We exchanged greetings, and I stole one of his hot dogs. Beth said, "Nice evening. Thank you for suggesting I come. You never know what you can learn by listening." Max said to me, "Beth briefed me on the Suffolk PD's progress so far. She did a lot of work in the last 4 days." I glanced at Beth to see if she'd said anything to Max about her visit to my house. Beth shook her head slightly. Max said to me, "Thanks again for your help." "No problem. Don't hesitate to call again." Max said to me, "You never returned any of my phone calls." "No, and I never will." "I don't think you have any reason to be angry." "No? Try reversing the situation, Max." I added, "I should have kicked you off my porch." Max replied, "Well, I apologize if I caused you any inconvenience." "Yeah, thanks." Beth interjected and said to Max, "John is in some trouble with his bosses because he helped you." Max said again, "Sorry. I'll make a few calls if you tell me who to call." "No offense, Max, but they don't want to hear from a rural police chief." Actually, I wasn't that angry with Max, and even if I had been, it's hard to stay angry with Max. Basically, he's a good egg, and his only real fault is that he always looks out for number one. Sometimes I make believe I'm angry so the other person thinks they owe me something, like a small piece of information. I asked Max, "By the way, have there been any other deaths among Plum Island workers that have come to your attention, say, 2 or 3 years ago?" He thought a moment, then said, "There was a drowning accident 2 years ago this summer. A guy, Dr. somebody, a veterinarian, I think. How'd he drown?" "I'm trying to think. He was in his boat. Right, he was night fishing or something, and when he didn't come home, his wife called us. We got the Coast Guard out, and they found his boat empty about 1 in the morning. The next day, he washed up from the bay there." He cocked his head toward Shelter Island. "Any evidence of foul play?" "Well, there was a bump on his head, and an autopsy was done, but it appeared he'd slipped in the boat, hit his head on the gunwale, and gone overboard." Max added, "It happens." He looked at me. "Why do you ask that?" I replied, "I promised Mr. Tobin, and so did you, Max, that we wouldn't discuss any of this at his party." I added, "I need a beer." I walked off, leaving Max with a weenie in his hand. Beth caught up to me and said, "That was rude. He deserved it. Remember, I have to work with him." "Then work with him." I saw my favorite server, and she saw me. She had a glass of beer on her tray and handed it to me. Beth took a glass of wine. Beth said, I want you to tell me about the archaeological digs, about Frederick Tobin, about everything you've found out, and all your conclusions. In return, I'll get you an official status, and you'll have all the resources of the county PD behind you. What do you say? I say, keep your official status. I'm in enough trouble, and I'll tell you all I know tomorrow. Then I'm out of here. John, stop playing hard to get. I didn't reply. Do you want me to make an official call to your boss? What's his name? Chief Inspector Asshole. Don't worry about that. The band was playing As Time Goes By, and I asked her, want to dance? No. Can we talk? Sure. Do you think the drowning of that other Plum Island employee is related to this case? Maybe. We might never know. But I see a pattern. What pattern? You look good in that hat. I want to talk about the case, John. Not here and not now. Where and when? Tomorrow. Tonight. You said tonight. I'll go back to your place. Well, I don't know if I can do that. Look, John, I'm not offering to have sex with you. I just need to talk to you. Let's go to a bar or something. Well, I don't think we should leave together. Oh. Right. You're in love. No. Well, maybe I am. In any case, this can wait until tomorrow. If I'm right about this, then our man is right over there, and he's hosting a party. If I were you, I'd keep him under loose surveillance tomorrow. Just don't spook him, okay? Okay, but we'll meet tomorrow, and I'll give you the whole thing, then I'm through with it. Monday, I'm heading back to Manhattan. I have medical and professional appointments all day Tuesday, okay? Tomorrow. Promise. Okay. She touched glasses with me, and we drank. We chatted a while, and while we were doing that, I saw Emma in the distance. She was speaking with a group of people, among whom was Frederick Tobin, ex-lover and suspected murderer. I don't know why it annoyed me to see them chatting. I mean, get sophisticated, John. When my wife took long business trips with her Randy Dan boss, did I get bent up? Not too much. Beth followed my gaze and said, she seems very nice. I didn't reply. Beth went on, I happened to mention her to Max. I definitely didn't respond to that. Beth said, she used to be Frederick Tobin's girlfriend. I guess you know that. I only mention it in case you don't. I mean, you should be careful of pillow talk if Tobin is a suspect. Or is that why you've befriended her? To find out more about Tobin? John? Are you listening to me? I looked at her and said, you know, Beth, I sometimes wish one of those bullets really had neutered me. Then I'd be completely free of the control of women. She observed, next time you're having sex, you won't be thinking like that. She turned and walked off. I looked around, realizing again that Tom and Judy would have been here tonight. I wondered if the treasure was supposed to be discovered on the bluff this week. Would they have announced it to the press by now? Or would they have announced it here tonight? In any case, the Gordons were in cold storage tonight. The treasure was hidden somewhere, and their probable killer was about 50 feet from me, talking to a woman I'd become very fond of. In fact, I noticed that Tobin and Emma were alone now, talking tête-à-tête. I'd had enough of this and made my way around the side of the house, discarding my hat and sword on the way. About halfway across the front lawn, I heard my name called, but I kept walking. John! I turned. Emma hurried across the lawn. Where are you going? Someplace where I can get a beer. I'll go with you. No, I don't need the company. She informed me, you need lots of company, my friend. That's your problem. You've been alone too long. Do you write a lovelorn column for the local weekly?
I will not let you bait me, and I will not let you leave alone. Where are you going?
Ye Old Town Tavern.
My favorite dive. Have you had their nacho platter?
She took my arm, and off we went. I got in her old car, and within 20 minutes we were ensconced in a booth at the Old Town Tavern, beers in hand, nachos and chicken wings on the way. The Saturday night regulars didn't look as if they were on their way to or back from Freddy's fabulous fete. Emma said, I called you last night. I thought you went out with the girls.
I called you when I got back, about midnight.
No luck with the hunt?
No.
She said, I guess you were sleeping. Actually, I went to Foxwoods. You can lose your drawers there.
Tell me about it.
We talked a while, and I said to her, I'm assuming you didn't say anything to Frederick about what we've been discussing. She hesitated a half second too long, then replied, I didn't. But I did tell him.
I said that you and I were dating.
She smiled.
Are we dating?
Archivists are always dating. July 4th, 1776. December 7th, 1941.
Be serious.
Okay. I seriously wish you hadn't mentioned me at all.
She shrugged. I'm happy.
I want everyone to know it.
He wished me luck.
What a gentleman.
She smiled. Are you jealous?
Not at all. I'm going to see him fry. I think you should not discuss us with him, and certainly not discuss pirate treasure.
Okay.
And so we had a pleasant dinner and then went to her place, a little cottage in a residential section of Kachog. She showed me her chamber pot collection, 10 of them, all used as planters and placed in a big bay window. My gift was now filled with soil and held miniature roses. She disappeared for a moment and returned with a wrapped gift for me. She said, I got it at the Historical Society gift shop. I didn't lift it, but I took 40% off for myself.
You didn't have to. Just open it.
And I did. It was a book titled The Story of Pirate Treasure. She said,
open to the flyleaf.
I opened it and read, To John, my favorite buccaneer, love Emma. I smiled and said, thank you. This is what I've always wanted.
Well, not always, but I thought you might want to look it over.
I will. Anyway, the cottage was cute. It was clean. There was no cat. She had scotch and beer. The mattress was firm. She liked the Beatles and the Bee Gees, and she had 2 pillows for me. What more could I ask for? Well, whipped cream. She had that, too. The next morning, Sunday, we went out for breakfast at the Kachog Diner. Then, without asking me, she drove to church, a nice clabbered Methodist church. She explained, I'm not a fanatic about it, but it gives me a lift sometimes. It's not bad for business, either. So I attended church, ready to dive under the pew if the ceiling caved in. After church, we retrieved my car in front of Mr. Tobin's mansion, and Emma followed me back to my mansion. While Emma made tea for herself, I called Beth at her office. She wasn't in, so I left a message with a guy who said he was working the Gordon case. I said to him, tell her I'll be out all day. I'll try to speak to her tonight. If not, she should come to my place tomorrow morning for coffee.
Okay.
I called Beth's house and got her answering machine. I left the same message. Feeling that I'd done what I could to keep my promise, I went into the kitchen and said, let's take a Sunday drive.
Sounds good to me.
She drove her car home and I followed. Then we went to Orient Point in my Jeep and took the New London Ferry. We spent the day in Connecticut and Rhode Island, visiting the mansions in Newport, having dinner in Mystic, then taking the ferry back. We stood on the deck of the ferry and watched the water and the stars. The ferry passed through Plum Island Gut, and I could see the Orient Point Lighthouse on the right. To the left, the old stone Plum Island Lighthouse was dark and forbidding against the night sky. The Gut was choppy, and Emma remarked, "That storm's tracking this way. The seas get rough long before the weather moves in." She added, "Also, the barometer drops. Can you feel it?"
"Feel what?"
"The falling air pressure."
I stuck my tongue out.
"Not yet."
"I can feel it.
I'm very weather sensitive."
"Is that good or bad?"
"I think it's a good thing."
"So do I."
"Are you sure you can't feel it? Don't your wounds ache a little?" I focused on my wounds, and sure enough, they did ache a little. I said to Emma, "Thanks for bringing it to my attention.
It's good to get in touch with your body, to understand the relationships between the elements and your body and mind."
"Absolutely. For instance, I get a little crazy during a full moon."
"Crazier," I pointed out.
"Yes, crazier."
"How about you?"
"I get very horny."
"Really? During a full moon?"
"Full moon, half moon, quarter moon." She laughed. I glanced at Plum Island as we passed by. I could see a few channel lights and, on the horizon, a glow from where the main lab would be behind the trees. Otherwise, the island was as dark as it had been 300 years ago. And if I squinted, I could imagine William Kidd's sloop, the San Antonio, reconnoitering the island one July night in 1699. I could see a boat being lowered off the side with Kidd and maybe one or two others aboard, and I could see someone in the boat rowing toward the shore. Emma interrupted my thoughts and asked me, "What are you thinking?"
"Just enjoying the night."
"You were staring at Plum Island."
"Yes. I was thinking about the Gordons."
"You were thinking about Captain Kidd."
"You must be a witch."
"I'm a good Methodist and a bitch, but only once a month."
I smiled.
"And you're weather sensitive."
"That's right."
She asked me, "Are you going to tell me any more about this murder?"
"No, I'm not."
"All right. I understand. If you need anything from me, just ask. I'll do whatever I can to help."
"Thanks."
The ferry approached the slip and she asked me, "Do you want to stay at my place tonight?"
"Well, I do, but I should go home."
"I can stay at your place."
"Well, to tell you the truth, I was supposed to talk or to meet with Detective Penrose today, and I should see if I can still do that."
"All right."
And we left the matter there.
I dropped her off at her home. I said to her, "I'll see you tomorrow after work."
"Good.
There's a nice restaurant on the water that I'd like to take you to."
"Looking forward to it."
We kissed on her doorstep, and I got into my Jeep and drove home. There were 7 messages for me. I was in no mood for them and went to bed without playing them. They'd be there in the morning. As I drifted off, I tried to figure out what to do about Frederick Tobin. There's sometimes this situation when you have your man, yet you don't have your man. There is a critical moment when you have to decide if you should keep stalking him, confront him, smoke him out, or pretend to lose interest in him. I should have also been thinking that when you corner an animal or a man, he can become dangerous. That the game is played by both hunter and hunted, and that the hunted had a lot more to lose. But I forgot to consider Tobin as a thinking, cunning animal, because he struck me as such a fop, the same way I'd struck him as a simpleton. We both knew better. But we'd both been lulled a little bit by each other's act. In any event, I blame myself for what happened.